Hello and welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. I'm your host Gavin Rushnell here with my co-hosts Daniel, Chase, and Adam. Before we get started, I want to thank our sponsors. That would be Cappy's Subs. You can call them at 407-647-9099. One more time, that is 407-647-9099. You can order over the phone or at cappyssubsfl.com. I'm going to say that one more time, cappyssubsfl.com. Thank you to them for sponsoring us. Next on thanks, the Adam. List. Yeah, thanks, Adam. Next on the list is the survey. I actually haven't looked at the survey since our last episode to see if we've gotten any more responses. I will do that after this episode.
You?
I know. I'm lazy. I deal with it. Yes, please do the survey. I will put the link in the bottom. It's 5 questions. It will take 2 seconds, and it will help the content be better for you. What's not to like about that? Also, we are going to start reading 5-star reviews on the episode, so please head over to Apple Podcasts and do that right away after you listen to this. Only takes a second, just leave a 5-star review. If you want to leave a comment, that would be great as well. We will read the comments if you leave one. Speaking of reviews, I wanted to read a review back from September 25th, 2019, when the podcast was in its infancy, and it was just me. I should preface this by saying that it was not with Daniel, Chase, and Adam at all. And whoever this was left a scathing review. It was harsh, to say the least. So you guys ready for this?
Oh, yeah.
I cannot listen to this dude anymore. Seems like a nice enough kid, and I have listened on Spotify from the beginning. In parentheses, before it was on Apple Podcast, end parentheses, but bro, .. My football IQ, as well as my overall IQ, dwindles every time he tries to provide analysis. I use that word extremely loosely, since what he appears to consider analysis is a combination of Twitter hot takes and whatever he reads on Transfermarkt and who scored. There are a plethora of Orlando City podcasts, so don't waste your time with this one. You will feel your brain matter slowly dying as he constantly misuses words and phrases. Allude was my favorite recently, and provides completely uneducated thoughts from one fan's perspective. That was my old punchline, by the way. It is gone now. It was gone before I read that, I think. I would highly recommend every single OCSE podcast except for this one. The end.
I agree.
I think it's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I will say, I do not mind criticism. I laughed at that one, but he was right in a way. I definitely have grown as a podcaster, as a host, as someone who analyzes football since September 25th, 2019. I will agree with that. And I'll also agree that it was probably a hard listen. I was by myself. Like I said, the podcast was in its infancy. So that was a funny review. If you still listen, thanks for the review. It was a good laugh. Now,
you've been too nice, Gavin.
That's because I'm not British.
Okay, well, look. I bet he's one of those people that has a Spotify free account, first of all. I bet he doesn't even have premium, right? So,
oh,
I bet he just has all this stuff on random. Okay.
Anyway, yeah, I definitely have Spotify premium.
I'd love to have been on the podcast when he did that, because I'd love to meet him. Mm. I want to say that. All right, Sunshine. Let's say it to our face. Come on, then.
I have no idea who it is.
I think we can find out. I think we could find out. I mean, hey, maybe if he's up for it, he can give us a call and tell us how we can do better, you know?
I won't be surprised if it was David Valentin.
It might be an ex-girlfriend of yours, you know? Or something like that. We assume he's male. It might be a female.
We never know. Anyways, I was going to introduce you guys. Daniel, you've been talking long enough. How are you doing today?
I'm all right.
You a little wound up there?
Nah, I'm good. This is my normal.
24/7. Chase, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. We had some technical difficulties before, but it's all sorted out now.
Yes, we always have technical difficulties. We always start like 20 minutes late. It is always you, isn't it?
Yeah.
You need to get yourself sorted out.
Least technologically sound.
Exactly. And Adam, how are you doing today?
Well, you know, just sketching out some bunker plans to avoid World War III on my whiteboard. But other than that, pretty fantastic, you know?
Yeah, we'll see how World War III pans out. Maybe this episode will never get published. All right, today we are going to talk about MLS's back tournament. We're like the last podcast in the world to talk about this tournament, but we still have our own takes on the tournament. It is a tournament that ranges from July 8th to August 11th. The grand prizes are, Adam was correct, you get a CONCACAF Champions League spot. You get 1.1.
Called it.
Yes, he did. You get $1.1 million. And I don't remember the last. What's the last prize?
You'll get tied for life with the you won the COVID Cup. That's what happened.
Oh, yeah.
No, there's three prizes, guys.
I thought it was just CCL and $1 million.
It's probably something stupid.
I know
there is three.
I know points from the group stage will count towards season points.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to frustrate me now because I read that there was three prizes. And, well, I looked it up and there are only two prizes. So I was wrong. Not three prizes. But you will win $1.1 million if you win. And I believe that is shared amongst the squad, or does it just go to the team? Do you guys know that?
I assume it would be the same as any other like prize pot. It goes to the club. They distribute as they see fit.
Okay. And then, obviously, Adam was right, CONCACAF Champions League berth. So there is stuff up for grabs, and with the players reportedly taking a pay cut, is that right as well? I believe they took a pay cut?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had to renegotiate the CBA too.
Yes. So with the players having to take a pay cut, they will be looking at that and saying, I would like some of that money because a lot of my money just went away. We were the group leaders in Group A. We all know our opponents by now. We will be facing Miami first, which was announced before the draw was even made. So I heard a rumor that Orlando asked for that. We will also face off against NYCFC, a team that we usually do pretty decent against, and Nashville, the new boys on the block. They have been moved to the East Coast because, well, they should be in the Eastern Conference anyways. I'm going to go through a really quick predictions with each one of you. And so, Daniel, you're going to go first. I have four categories, and I just want you to say to your answer and then give me a reason why real quick. All right. And I'm going to go through all of you guys, not just Daniel. So you ready, Daniel?
Go on.
Best player. Who's going to be Orlando City's best player in the group stage?
Nani.
Okay, who's going to be our worst player? Oh, wait. Well, you don't have to give a reason why for Nani. Worst player.
That's kind of harsh. I don't want to demonize anybody right now, but I'll say Dwyer.
Dwyer? Ooh, okay.
No, I'm just kidding. honestly, it's a harsh question, really. I feel as if... I feel it'll be one of the fringe players will come on for like 5 or 10 minutes and that'll be it. You know, that'll be what they're known for.
How about I rephrase? How about most disappointing? How about that?
Well, I might say Dwyer, and the only reason I say it is because historically he doesn't seem to ever be fit for the start of a season, and we're kind of restarting the season right now.
Mm.
He's not had any games, any training, you know, not to knock on the guy, but last 3 years he's just not been fit. So I would say I don't want to go with the worst player. I don't think any player should be judged fairly right now, you know, on the circumstances. So I'll just say maybe disappointment would be Dwyer if he's not fit.
Okay, so where do you think we'll finish in the group out of six?
I think we'll finish third.
Third? Okay. Yeah. And top goal scorer?
From our squad?
Yeah.
I'll go with Nani again. I think he's going to show up. He's a very professional guy and he'll be ready. He seems to be like just constantly fit. You know, we saw him in the preseason game and he looked, you know, he got light years ahead of everyone else on the pitch, I thought. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Chase, best player?
I mean, I would say Nani, but just to mix it up a little bit, I'll go Pedro Galese in net.
That's a good shout. Most disappointing?
I don't know. Maybe I'll say like Benji, because I think that, you know, anyone who listens to this would know that we're all pretty decently high on him, but he just hasn't been able to get a good run of games here. And, you know, that's a detriment to young players, so he might struggle here.
Position, where do you think we'll finish?
I mean, that being said about Benji, I think that third, but I think that second is very possible. I think New York is probably like the drawn on like kind of first place team, and then it's between us and Philadelphia, but I don't know. Philadelphia is a little questionable to me.
And who do you think will score the most goals for us?
For us, yeah, I think it'll probably be Nani. I think most of the play is going to go through him here.
Okay, Adam, over to you. Who will be our best player of the tournament?
I mean, I think you have to say Nani, but other than that, I'll just go with Nani. That no one's going to rise to his level.
Okay, most disappointing?
I'm going to have to go with Junior Urso, actually, and here's why. I don't think Junior Urso is a bad player. I think he would be fantastic for us if the season had gone as planned. What we saw in those first two games was, I think, a little bit of lack of being used to the squad, a little bit of lack of chemistry. I think and he's an older player, kind of set in his ways a little bit, maybe isn't used to the style of play of American soccer. I think he might just, like, the circumstances might not be great for him to have his best performance like we'd expect of him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, where do you think we'll finish?
I'm going to say second, because I think we'll beat NYCFC. Just because we always seem to do better against them than we have any business doing. And also, NYCFC is used to playing on their baseball field. They're not going to have that home field advantage like they normally do half the season when they rack up a bunch of home points. I don't think they're as good as people think they are, and I think we'll play them tough. That's why I think they'll finish third and Philly will take the group.
That's a great point. Great point about the field. Yeah.
I think NYCFC, if you just look at away points, like they were maybe like the best team at home last year. But I think in terms of just away points and away performance, like in the conference, they were in the bottom half. Like they don't really perform that well on the road.
I think
because it's such a tough field to play on, like, you know, it is a baseball stadium, and anyone coming in there, like, you're not used to that kind of grass, whatever.
They have Maxi Morales, who's really good. Other than that, who scares you on that roster?
I mean, Matrice is pretty good. Hey, Bear. They have good players.
They have good players, but they don't scare you. You know, like we play Atlanta, and they have got, and I'm not even really scared of Maxi Morales. Like, yeah, he's had good games against us, but he's not like a game wrecker like Giovinco was. You know?
They
don't have any. I mean, Morales is their standout player, but they don't have an MVP level guy that can rise to the occasion. I don't think Morales is better than Nani, you know, or Ilsenio for Philly, you know. I think Philly has a much more solid roster.
Really?
All right. And Adam, who is the top goal scorer for us?
Dom Dwyer.
Yeah, I know you're I know you're happy we're having him for this tournament.
I think volatility is our friend, and Dom Dwyer is a very volatile player who's reactive to his surroundings. I think he's chomping at the bit to get a chance to prove people wrong. And also, just if he starts at striker, he's likely to be our top scorer. So, you know.
All right. Best player for me, Pereira. I think Mauricio Pereira is going to have a lot of space. I think he's going to be able to find that space and get into it and then create chances in that space. He's got amazing vision, which is something that doesn't really leave after 2 months of not playing. We see players go through end of season breaks all the time and then come back and still be very good. And that's kind of what this was. Obviously, we had the break again before this as well. So it's going to be tough. But all I'm trying to say is I think Pereira is going to be very good in this tournament. I think defenders will not be able to keep track of him 100%, and he will be able to take advantage of that. Most disappointing player, I'm going to go with Jegson Mendez. I think his game is based off of his physicality and just He runs up, he runs back, he runs left, he runs right, he makes tackles, he's very strong, and then he lays off the ball, short passes, doesn't really try to impact the final third all that too much. While he does go forward and do that, that's not his best skill set. His best skill set is winning the ball back. And so I think that later on in games, he's going to struggle and he'll probably be the one subbed off just because Pareja will probably say, go run your ass off for 50, 60 minutes. And then I'm going to take you off until you get back up to full fitness. And honestly, they're not going to be back to full fitness in 3 games time. So I think Mendez will be the most disappointing player after what we saw in those first 2 games against RSL and Colorado. Where do I think we will finish? I think just like banged my door. I think we will finish third, but I think we'll go through. I think Group A is almost guaranteed to have the third place team that goes through. It's not a guarantee, but there are so many teams that the probability of one of those teams being one of the 4 third places to go through is much higher. And I know we'll talk about probabilities later with that Yahoo article that we all read because mm-hmm. we're at a disadvantage. But I think with the way it's set up, there are 6 teams in this group. One of them should be one of the 4 teams to go through in the best third place spot. And then top goal scorer, I'm going to give it to... I'm going back and forth in my head between Dwyer and Nani, but I think I'll go with Nani. He was kind of our... I think Pareja, we all saw he was trying to have Nani be our goal scorer anyway this season. As he gets older, he's going to be asked to be in the final third a lot more and not track back. And so I think now that he's not 100% in shape, I think that he will be looking to impact the final third. So he was going to be our top scorer. So that was basically the overall essence of the tournament that I wanted to talk about. The other quick things was that if it does go to overtime in the knockout stages, it goes directly to penalties. So there will be no overtime.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah. So straight to penalties, no overtime, and VAR will be in use in the tournament, which I think everybody was expecting.
Go ahead, Adam. Wanted to give a shout to Chris Mueller because we didn't talk about him at all. There's 5 subs per game now, right, in this tournament because of the fitness levels?
Yes, 5 subs.
Yeah, I think we're this is kind of Chris Mueller's time to shine as a super sub. Like 5 subs, it's almost guaranteed he's going to get in. I think Pareja will start him on the bench, and then whenever he thinks the game needs a spark, he just burns that sub on Mueller. I think he's going to excel in that role.
All right. I was going to talk about it later, but yeah, let's talk about the 5 substitutes thing now. It's a very important aspect of the game. And I've heard a lot of talk on other podcasts, mainly Arsenal podcasts, about the 5 substitutes and their thoughts on it. And one of the host was talking about how it could be used for good or for evil. So basically it could be used for good in the fact that coaches could tactically switch things. And as we know, Pareja is a tinkerer. He likes to do anything possible to win. Having 5 substitutes at hand allows him to tinker a lot more, allows him to experiment a lot more with his players. On the other hand, it can be used for evil because let's say we're going against a team that kind of does the anti-soccer. So they would say, okay, don't worry about getting yellow cards because go out there and every time the other team gets the ball, bring them down, foul them. And if you get a yellow card, we'll substitute you. And we have five substitutes, so we can do that. That's not what Manchester City does, but whenever the other team has a counterattack, Manchester City fouls them. It's tactical fouling. It's a very smart way of playing, but it's kind of anti-soccer. And now that can be multiplied by 100 because, and that can happen way more often because teams aren't afraid of getting yellow cards now because there are so many substitutions. And then the other way was you go out there and you set up extremely defensive. And these are other people's thoughts, not mine. I should say that they could go player teams could go out there and be set up very defensive. And when you don't have the ball, obviously you're going to be running a lot more than the team with the ball. That's something that we've all known growing up playing soccer. Well, now with the 5 substitutes, you can sit there and be way more defensive. And then in the 60th minute, switch out half your squad and then you're fine for the rest of the game. And you're really not going to lose. You're not really going to get tired as many tired legs as you would have. And that is something about soccer that happens. you know, the problem with the sitting deep tactic is at the end of the day, you're going to get tired, and goals usually come in when around the 60, 70, 80th minute when legs start to get tired. Not anymore with the five substitutes. So, Adam, all of that being said, I want to get your thoughts on whether it's a good thing that the five substitutes are here, or it's a bad thing.
Good, bad. It depends on how it's used, but I think it's necessary. Like in preseason friendlies, obviously there are unlimited subs because coaches are trying to see all their players and get from tactics. But another reason for that is match fitness. You know, there are injuries that can, will, and do happen when guys that aren't fit are playing 90 minutes in a professional soccer match. It is a taxing thing on the body. And I think MLS is doing everything in its power to, without altering the competition too much, make sure that player safety is a priority. So I think it's necessary that they have the increased substitutes. And as far as the anti-soccer, as you termed it, I don't think we'll see too much of that. I may be wrong. I very well could be wrong, but I don't think so for a few reasons. One, MLS coaching just isn't as top level as European coaching, where you usually see those tactics. I don't see a lot of fouling, like tactical fouling in MLS, other than guys that get beaten reflexively, just like dive in and get a foul, you know, but I don't see a lot of it as an intentional strategy. And also both teams have those five subs. So if it starts to get chippy and you start doing the tactical fouling, well, the other team can do it right back. And if you're going to sub a guy out, then that yellow card is basically a red card. And what if your star midfielder gets a yellow and then got to sub him out, and then your ball movement's not the same. So I don't think we'll see a lot of that, actually. So I view it as a mostly positive move.
All right, Daniel Chase, any thoughts on that?
I think that something interesting that we might see is maybe not as much with us, but more so with some of my CFC who have like a decent kind of youth academy going, is we might see some teams try to like bleed youth in, maybe especially like in the last 30 minutes of these games. Like, I know that they do, you know, obviously it's a competition that you want to win. It's pretty much like the Open Cup this year. And, you know, these games do go towards your total points total. But I think that we might see Jordan Bender get some looks. Did they announce like the roster that we're taking out? Because I know that it's something that's like you can only have like 25 is players, it? But yeah, I want to say that they're only allowing like the squad.
I believe it's a 23 match day squad, but I think you can take your whole team.
I don't know. I think that it might just be you take 23 just because there's certain restrictions. I don't know. I could be wrong because I think we have 27 and we're going to leave 23. Or we're gonna take 23. I mean, and maybe leave 4. But either way, I think that like Jordan Bender would come on, and I think even maybe like Santi could get going, though he could be very feasibly one of the people that get left behind. But something interesting, this five substitutes is like, I'd be interested to see if like Tavon Gray, or like Justin Hack, or James Sands, even though he's probably a starter, and like Joe Scally, like, you know, I know this isn't like an NYCFC podcast, but they have a lot of interesting young players who have like future European prospects, so it's just going to be interesting to see like kind of league-wide how teams use that to integrate young players into their squads, into their match days.
Yeah, we have 27 players, so if we're only allowed to take 23, it means 4 get left out. I'd bet that Stas Johar would be one of those. Are we saying
no? You have to. You have to take 3 goalkeepers. I saw this.
Oh, you have to take 3.
Yeah,
so probably Bender gets left out then. I'd say Bender, Dijon, yeah, Desart, so. And Patino probably.
Or I think Joey Desart especially. I think DK could be at risk just because I don't think he's anywhere near the match day squad at the moment. But
maybe Patino would be in over DK.
I'd say Patino over DK.
Yeah.
Just because he has that experience from the year before, but
I don't know, but
stuff like that.
It's different. Like Oscar is someone who likes to play youth, like young players, and DK is, you know, we've seen that he's like fairly talented, even though he's like probably not up to the level yet. He is someone who he could try to get some minutes here. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how he picks his squad. I think Rubinho might get left. I don't think Rubinho gets
left.
Really? I would like him to just because he's been poor, but it is.
In a tournament like this, I think you take the bets.
Now, one thing I did want to talk about, though, is vets versus kids, per se. Because while vets and experience is great, kids are going to have way more energy. You know, you bring 18, 19-year-olds, they get back up to fitness a lot quicker than 29, 30-year-olds. Now, I know Rabinho's only 25, and that's kind of what sparked my mind. But still, what would you prefer, Daniel? Would you prefer having more kids with more energy? They'll be able to deal with the physical side of the game a lot easier. Or would you rather have lineups full of veterans who have experience? While nobody has experience with this tournament kind of thing per se after a long layoff, but you know, having the experience of someone like Nani out there who has gone and won the Euros, you know, is that, would you prefer that or would you prefer the kids?
Yeah, I feel like you need good experience in certain areas. Like, for example, you wouldn't take Guiesi out of goal. He's your best keeper and one of your most experienced players. You want him back there. Just like you want, you know, you probably want Janssen in the back and you'll certainly want Nani in the forward line. For me, in the context of Orlando, those three experienced guys would play. Those would be my first three players. I would mix it up after that. I'd be able to give the younger players minutes. I think like the more stressful positions, especially out wide and you know where there's going to be a lot more running involved, I think you need to give those younger guys some experience. And I mean, the tournament, there's a lot at stake, but it's the same for everybody. It's a leveler for every team, if you ask me, because not everybody's going to want to play their best team for 90 minutes. And going back to the subs, I understand why they've got the looser restrictions on the substitutions, but I just hope as a coach that we're not winning 1-0 and then he decides to start taking the defence off that's doing well, putting people in for the sake of putting people in. I mean, we've got to be, you know, kind of careful with those substitutions. And at the end of the day, a win is a win, a result's a result. And if we can win two of those three games, you know, playing our best players as much as we can, then we need to go for that. It's better to do that than win one and draw the other two. You know, I'd rather take one defeat, you know, and win the other two than play the best players to get those two results than whatever else. So, well, you know, those are my thoughts on that.
I kind of wanted next to go through our preferred starting lineups. And Adam, I'm going to go to you first. I want you to list off an 11 that you want to see against Miami. I think we're all going to have a little bit of a different 11 in mind.
Yeah, I think we got to start out strong. It's going to depend on how close together these games are. If they're separated by 4 days, 7 days, you know, that's going to impact your strategy in terms of subs and who starts. Obviously, Nani is a lock in. Like Daniel said, Nani, Galese, Janssen are locks. I think Pereira is a lock too, just because that experience and quality. After that, it's very much a toss-up at striker. I think Dom Dwyer. I think he gave him the chance to prove himself. Not sure at right wing, so we can come back to that. I'm going to assume it's like a 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1-ish kind of formation. Midfield, Mendes for me. I'm torn between Urso and Andres Pereira. I think that opening game, Urso gets the start just because of his quality, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Pereira. And I think it's almost certainty Pereira is going to see a lot of playing time, either as a starter or a sub. But I think I'll go Urso. And then in defense, Janssen, Carlos, Moutinho, Juan, field your best 11. Right wing, I really wish we'd been able to close for an Okoman. But obviously, that's a lost cause. I think Benji's still our best player there, even though I don't think he's a winger. I think he's a striker. But I would sit Mueller on the bench and then put him in at 60 when people are tired and he can run at tired legs. So I think I'm going to go Benji at right wing and kind of shade him over to make runs in the channel and not really ask him to track back. Too much, because I just want him running at the defense and have Brera and Nani, and maybe Nani shifts under a little bit as an inverted winger. I mean, he plays that anyway. He roams around wherever he wants. but almost have that 4-2-3-1 and attack shift to like a 4-2-2-2 almost, where Nani tucks in a little bit, Dom moves out left and making runs at the left side at left striker, and Benji shifts up to right striker. I think we could see that. And then Juan coming up to cover the right wing.
Now, if I were being fancy with it, I'd go straight up 4-4-2. I would have Mueller on the right because he can bomb up and down that wing. I'd have the Juan, Carlos, Janssen in the back. And then at left back, I'd start with Kamal Miller. And then at left mid, I'd do João Moutinho. And then we could do the wing back thing that we did against Colorado.
Could do that.
Yeah. So, and then in the middle, I would do Mendes and I would do Perea. And that would be just for run, straight physicality. They can both run. They're both good enough to progress the ball. And then I would honestly do Nani and Pereira up top. And then kind of Pereira dropping in and kind of being like a false nine, has a lot of freedom to do what he wants up there. And then Nani being our kind of striker, also having a lot of freedom. And those two creating for each other and trying to get in behind. It would be a very creative way of doing it and not what we're going to see. We're probably going to see something way closer to what Adam's saying. Obviously, Galese in goal as well. I think we're going to see something way closer to what Adam's saying. But if I were in charge, that's what I would want to see, because we'd be able to have that workmanlike midfield. We'd be able to have the quality on the left with João Moutinho putting in crosses. We'd be able to have our best goal scorer up top in Nani and still have the creative forces of Pereira and Mueller.
If you wanted to go with that, I think you put Pereira at right wing and you put Benji at striker, just to have someone who can be the guy to put the ball in that. Because neither Nani or Pereira are primary scorers, never have been at any point in their career. I think relying on those two guys to suddenly become strikers is playing with fire. But I like the idea. I just think you start with Mueller on the bench there. You put Benji in at striker, and you let Pereira play that Krasnodar role that he played at right mid and then dropping inside.
Yeah, now that's a good point. But for me, I think Mueller is going to be extremely important. I think he's going to be very important from the off, because he works his tail end off, and he will not stop until he is dead tired, and then Pereira takes him off. Yeah. So I think in this first game, I'd personally love to see Mueller start this first game, because we're going to need his work rate. We're going to need his help in defense, and Benji doesn't offer that.
That's true. Yeah.
Chase or Daniel, do you have any different lineups that you've been thinking of? Chase?
Where did you say Pereira in yours? Where did you say Pereira was going to go? Mauricio?
Kind of like, it was almost like a 4-4-1-1 if we were to look at it. He'd be kind of like a false nine attacking mid kind of player. Coming deep, and then Nani would be up further.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I like the idea of kind of defending. So like when you say 4-4-2, do you mean like we would defend kind of in a five back, or we would go forward with like a three back with wing backs type?
Yeah, like, go forward back. Yeah. And then kind of like basically what we saw against Colorado. You remember how the OC intern put us in a 4-4-2 with João Moutinho at left mid?
Yeah.
But we're definitely in a five back.
I think that actually is kind of an interesting idea, because I think that if you go into a five back, you can – I don't know. I think fitness obviously is going to be hard to come by here, and both of our best fullbacks, most that they offer is kind of going forward and asking them to get up and down both is going to be tough. And I don't even know if they'll be able to kind of physically be able to handle that. And that might leave us kind of drawn out at the back. So I think it is kind of an interesting idea of like defending going forward with a three back. And then, you know, if we get hit on the counter, we'll have three center backs back there. But I still think that we'll probably go, I don't know. I mean, I do think that we'll still probably operate in kind of like a 4-2-3-1. And I think it'll be more like what we've traditionally seen, where it'll just be a combination. It'll be Gleison, obviously. It'll be like either Schlegel or Carlos. I think it'll probably still be Janssen, and then Moutinho and Juan. And then Urso, I think like two podcasts ago, I said that he was like pretty much exclusively like a physical player, and I think that was kind of a wrong assessment, I guess. Like watching, I watched a little bit of the game back, and he was decent, and I think he offers a lot, a decent bit more than that. But I think that it would probably, we'll probably still run out in a five back with like that double pivot in the midfield. And I think that Mauricio will be still in that attacking mid spot, which I think is good, because if we give him pace on the wings, he'll be able to kind of dictate from deep, which I think is maybe one of his better opportunities. Like I think he said to Benji, like we've talked about this before, like he'll just kind of find players, like especially players he can play in behind. And I think that'd be something that, if we can get guys to run at tired legs, run at unfit back lines, and have a player who can put good balls back in, I think that we could be dangerous with that. And then I think it would be Nani, and then it'll probably be Benji, and then it'll also probably be Dom Dwyer. But I think something that we could see and something that I would like to see is that that kind of three-man like midfield there, that with Nani, Pereira, and Benji, I think that maybe we could kind of see them like interchanging. I think that two of them, you know, obviously Nani and Mauricio are able to understand the game enough to have proper spacing and to not leave any big gaps in our midfield. And Benji, I think he's best when he's like cutting in. I think if we force him to stay on the end line and, you know, receive the ball and run at defenders and try to cross, like that is a misuse of him. So I think, you know, after all that, you know, rambling, I think it's going to be like a 4-2-3-1 with our traditional goalkeeper, traditional back line, the same double pivot. And I think that we're going to see a lot of dictation from deep, and you know the play is going to go through Nani and Mauricio even more than it was in the regular season.
All right, Daniel, how about you? What would your preferred lineup be and play style?
To get the best out of these players right now with the squad we have, I'd go with a Christmas tree formation. So pretty much a 4-3-2-1. Gaiassi would be the keeper. Moutinho and Juan would be out wide in the fullback positions. Janssen and Carlos and Ben centre backs. And then with the three in front, Urso would play the most defensive of the three. He'd be the distributor as well as just because I feel like he can run those lines a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But he would pop in between the centre backs. The fullbacks would push forward a little more. And then just ahead of him, I would have Mendes just playing ahead of him. And then I would have, you know, Mendes would kind of be the shuttler, I guess. And then next to him, I'd have Pereira, who's got a bit more license to get forward. And then ahead of them, you've got Nani, you have Chris Mueller. I think that neither of them are natural wide players, but they will take whatever space they can find and try and play between the lines. And then in front of them, I'd have Benji Michel. And the goal is to create overloads. The goal is to create movement. And I feel in most positions on the field, especially in attack, we can get some 3-versus-2 situations going. And that would be the goal. But getting back, we'd essentially be able to get to a back four or a back five.
And I bet Pereira would make some really good late runs. That's what I'm really thinking. See that.
Oh, you have to give him free license to go wherever he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you'd give him that, but you know, Nani and Mueller would get the most license in that formation for me. Pereira will get the ball, and he'll instantly have three players in front of him to look at, and he'll have his fullbacks pushing forward, and you're just looking at some good potential opportunities for overload. And I feel like Orlando sometimes we're a little bit scarred by the James O'Connor era where we played scared every game. Like, let's just go out there and just have some fun with it. Seriously, like it's. Go play. Everyone's down here. Nobody's match fit, so just give it a go.
I wonder, are y'all familiar with Man City's tactics, and particularly with their front four, where they don't? I mean, yeah, the internal put them up on like you know Sterling's on right wing, Aguero's at striker, whatever. But their front four don't really have positions so much as there are points on the pitch that. Guardiola will say you can occupy one of these, and you know that Barca tiki taka triangle passing, occupy these points and overload the defense and find the gaps, and it doesn't really matter who's there, just someone get the ball there, pass it, find a lane, either make a run or pass it. You know, I wonder if we'll see something like that extreme fluidity, and obviously that requires chemistry and practice. But I wonder if coaches have been, you know, sitting there bored out of their minds for the past 3 months. You know, I wonder what Man City's up to, you know, or something like that. And I keep looking at our roster with we always seem to struggle when figuring out, like, we agree that the back line and the midfield are mostly going to look the same. But when we get to the front three, front four, we got a bunch of players that were like, okay, we kind of want to get these guys on the field, but we're not sure which position tactics we want them to play. So I wonder if we, not to the extent or prowess or precision that Man City does it with, because it's surgical. I really don't know. It's like a hive mind almost. It's stunning to watch, but obviously not to that extent. But I wonder if we see that front three or four have, like, you know, when you set the free roam option on FIFA for your players.
Go do whatever you want.
Yeah, kind of like that. Like, hey, make overloads, make those triangles, get wherever you can find a spot that's open, get that 3 yards of space and put a shot on frame. It kind of doesn't matter where you start or where you end up as long as you're open.
Yeah. The only thing is you brought up the point of that takes chemistry. I think it's a lot harder said, or it's a lot easier said than done. Not a lot harder said than done. Yeah, I think, like, I don't really know what he's going to do, but I think the smart thing to do would be put bodies in the back, go three at the back, and then let your quality players go up the field and do the job. Although I love the idea of the Christmas tree. There's playing smart, there's playing scared, and there's playing smart. And I think that this first game, the smart thing to do would be get bodies in the back, make sure that you've got Pizarro on a leash, you've got somebody around him at all times, and then the rest of their squad, who do they have? Carranza, that striker, the young striker that's never played for them before because he was injured. And then that winger, I don't even remember his name. They're three expensive signings. Yeah, they could be good, but they don't have any chemistry. Pizarro and the other guy played two games together, and Pizarro was dragging them through those games. I think if we take care of Pizarro, we don't need to worry about the rest of the team very much.
I think we actually match up really well there because we got Mendes. You can have Mendes be the designated Pizarro destroyer.
Yes, but I still think it's safer to have three at the back just for this first game while we aren't really sure. Like, their coaches are going to have something in mind when it comes to their players' fitness. But at the end of the day, we have to get into the game and we have to see how they are. And the coaches have to do that. No matter how much they watch in training, I don't think they know 100% how they're going to be in the 37th minute as their legs are getting tired in the first half. Are they going to lose concentration? Are they going to lose focus? And then somebody slips behind them, 1-0 we're losing, and we lose 1-0 because we can't claw that back. Having three at the back kind of puts a safeguard, and it takes away that if somebody has that loss of concentration, there's somebody there to back that up. All right, well, I think that's good enough for part one, talking about the tournament. We are going to do fan questions right after this. All right, and welcome back to part two, where we are going to answer some fan questions. I did post on Instagram and Twitter today asking, you know, what were some of your questions about the tournament? And we are going to start with our very good friend, David Valentin. He says, in view of the fact that Group A is a sandpit, do you believe MLS will fix the problem? And that is, I believe, in terms of that article that came out on Yahoo, talking about how Group A is statistically, mathematically unfair to all the other groups. And similarly, Marima, a friend of the podcast, she says, do you think MLS will consider how teams go past the group stage in terms of our 16 group disadvantage, like the article suggested? Adam, you look like you have an opinion on this.
Since when has MLS ever fixed anything?
They're not going to fix anything because of an article.
No.
I think, will they consider it, Moraima? They might. No, okay, they will talk about it, but they will not consider it because they will... I think they'll talk about it and be like, oh, well, next time, that would be something great to do. Except there's not going to be another pandemic like this in the next 80 years.
Next pandemic.
Yeah, next pandemic will do that. So I don't think they'll consider it. I think they'll just kind of be like, okay, this is some valid criticism that we will take and not do anything with. So same with you, David. Do we believe MLS will fix the problem? Absolutely not. Also, David says, placing Miami in Orlando City's group with no draft, does that affect the integrity of the tournament since a CONCACAF Champions League spot is in play? And I do think this is a very, very interesting question. So, Chase, I'm going to start with you. Do you think them placing a certain team in a certain group affects the integrity of the entire tournament?
I don't know. Like, I really just think that looking at these groups, I mean, I'm not going to say it was rigged. But there's like El Trafico.
You can say it was rigged. I 100% believe it was rigged. Yeah, I believe it. I will not lie.
There's a decent few rivalry games. There's like Hell is Real in here. Like I just think
Cascadia.
That. You, sure. Yeah.
The only rivalry that is not together is Seattle Portland. That's the only one. The other major rivals are out there.
Yeah.
And Portland Seattle got the Cascadia.
Oh yeah, with Vancouver. My bad, I went stupid there for a second. But right, it's Vancouver, right? Cascadia.
Yeah.
I know, I'm kind of a complete idiot. Yeah.
No, you're right.
So, like, I just think that it was probably rigged from the jump, just because it's like, there's so much going on here. Like I think that we just basically got a sneak peek and I really didn't even watch the drawing just because, you know, it doesn't interest me to watch. I like Charlie Davies, but it doesn't interest me to watch him like pick out some balls and like pick his group or Bocanegra or anyone like that do anything. Carlos Bocanegra, but I just think that it was rigged from the jump, and I think that they had it planned out and they just kind of did a whole facade. We got what we got. I think they knew from the jump.
Well, somebody said that it was kind of like Deal or No Deal, where the person literally pointed at like a number, or they said a number that they wanted, and then they took the number and revealed the team. Is that?
Yeah,
I didn't watch it.
I did. I watched it for like a minute just when they were popped up, and I saw the end of it, and it was like Luis Muzi and Carlos Bocanegra were picking numbers, and then it was like, I want to say it was Charlie Davies. He was like, you know, like he would open the ball up and it'd be like, all right, you got, you know, FC Cincinnati in your group. And I don't know, it was like so easy to be like faked if they wanted to. And I just think that that's the case. I think that a lot of that type of stuff goes on, like general favoritism and entertainment value and stuff like that. So I definitely wouldn't put it past that. This was just, I'm not saying the tournament itself, but the grouping at least was rigged from the jump. And I don't know if that has much of an effect on the integrity, just because that's, you know, typical MLS almost. It's just what we've come to expect.
Yeah, like, come on. Atlanta, New York Red Bulls, FC Cincinnati, and Columbus Crew. Two of MLS's, they are rivalries because MLS says they're rivalries and they play each other in rivalry week and everything. Like, well, we play Atlanta in rivalry week, but Atlanta and New York are considered rivals. Like, come on, really? Both Inter Miami, Orlando, yep, Montreal and Toronto. I noticed that. Where's the other one? Seattle and Vancouver, and obviously LAFC, LA Galaxy. Come on, really? And Portland and LA Galaxy don't really like each other 100% either.
RSL and SKC together.
Yeah.
What?
RSL and SKC.
I'm looking at it right now.
That's a big rivalry.
Yeah.
Like, it's seriously, it's just like staring us in the face. All they had to do was like take out Portland and put Dallas in, and this would be like their ideal bracket, probably.
They had to do one to make sure.
And Seattle aren't together. You can't say it was rigged.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's our biggest rivalry.
It's whatever, I guess. It is what it is.
All right. Speaking of rivalries, we have a question from Lewis. He says, what should the rivalry between Orlando and Inter Miami be called?
Hmm. Should be called Plastic. I call the other
El
rappers.
Plastico.
El Plastico.
El Plastico. Yeah,
that's going to be Miami and Atlanta.
Yeah, but it's a manufactured rivalry again. And I mean, going back to the tournament question, to me, I don't like the tournament format because it's like when you run out of housing and you need emergency houses and they 3D print a house to look nice. That's what our tournament looks like right now. A fucking 3D printed house with some nice flower pots in the windows and a nice little picket fence around it.
Damn. So look,
it's a respectable
What's on
tournament.
The inside?
It's a bullshit tournament. It's stupid. It's, and of course, it's rigged when you're picking the teams that are going to be in the groups like that. You know, to get ratings up, you're just selling this game once again as a product, not as a sport, not as a competition, but as a product again. And I wish this league would just stop doing that and just, you know, make more decisions off sporting integrity. Like, either just randomly draw the groups completely and let whatever will be, like the FA Cup draw, just draw the teams out with, you know, at random. Or just, you know, just even just play the fixtures in Orlando, just go with the schedule, but play all the games in the Florida area. I don't know. This is just, it's a 3D printed bullshit house is what this tournament is.
Daniel is right from outside. Like, we all watch MLS and we follow the league. We're used to this. From outside of this country, this probably looks like a giant farce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's not much, we've talked about this before, but nothing really in MLS is organic. And like Daniel said, like,
oh yeah,
as soon as Inter Miami was announced to have a team, it was already just expected that like we were going to have a rivalry. And like, that's not really the case. Like, I understand that like things with like Merseyside Derby and you know, when Manchester United play City, it's a big game and things like that. But it's like some of the bigger rivalries just happen organically. Like, honestly, I can't even speak to it on the top of my head, but like, I know that Leeds and United, they hate each other. I know that like Liverpool and United, they hate each other. And
here's one.
They're not necessarily like from the same city.
Mm-hmm. Arsenal and Stoke hate each other.
They do.
They are
right.
Massive rivals. Yeah. It's because a Stoke City player broke Aaron Ramsey's leg years ago, absolutely shattered his leg, refused to apologize for it. And our Arsenal fans were like livid out of him, obviously. And now the Stoke fans hate the Arsenal fans because they were mad at their player. Stoke fans also boo Aaron Ramsey every time he plays at Stoke's ground, even though the Stoke player was the one who broke his leg. Every time he goes, he gets whistles and boos. And Arsenal and Stoke are now a rival. And that is not a manufactured rival. That is one that happened because of something that happened on the pitch. So I think you're 100% right, Chase.
And it's like, you know, I'm not even saying that, and I know you're not saying, but it's not like someone has to break someone's leg or anything like that for there to be a rivalry. But it's just like whatever happens, happens. Like, if it happens, it should be just organic. Like, I get there being more of a competition just based off the fact that, you know, like we're in the same state and things like that. And that, it's just natural, like, competition, and you want to be able to be like, oh, like, I mean, I don't know if people even say this, but they'll be like, oh, Florida is purple or something like that. But it's not like people have been, you know, talking trash on Twitter and all that between Inter Miami and Orlando for so long. And I think that Inter Miami personally, like, they're a little bit kind of corny almost with their supporters. So I get making fun of them. But it's like, I almost feel like a little bit is just the need almost to feel like there is sort of a rivalry. When in all reality, we're all... like, the MLS is, it's almost like we are all owned by the MLS and we're just kind of playing it out. Like, I don't know if you guys get what I'm saying there, but it's like, like, I feel passion for the club, but it, like, at least from looking out, like, people just say, oh, he's going to the MLS if a player comes over here. They don't say, oh, which team is he going to go to? Like, we're all just kind of one big commodity. And I don't think that we necessarily have a whole lot of identity going. I think that we have passion for sure, but our like, the identity that we have here is a lot farther off.
Well, isn't that what it is? Isn't it MLS owns every single club?
Yeah, that's what the franchising is. Like I get that we're still supposed to be our own entities, and I get that, but we are like just franchising, and owners aren't even owners, they're just chief investors and things like that. So it is the case, but I don't think they want it to be viewed that way, but they don't really do themselves any favors by kind of having that tagline, I guess, fall off the league, because we do just look like like, it's just, we're just the MLS. Like, you know, like if you think of like Manchester United, you don't think the Premier League isn't the first thing that comes to mind. It's like you think of Manchester United. And I think that just the MLS is just seen as just one big blob. Like, there's not much to go, like, to identify each team against, I guess. I don't know. It's just kind of how American sports is almost too. And when you try to apply that to an international market, it's not always the best sort of optics, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I do think David had a great point, though, about the integrity of the tournament. And you too, Daniel. I do think the integrity of this, this 3D printed tournament is shot. I mean, we knew 2 hours in advance that we were going to play Miami and Miami were going to be in our group. And I remember seeing all the comments. People were like, how do you know? We haven't even drawn the group stage yet. And here it is. Orlando City are playing to Miami in the first game back, because that's what's going to get the clicks.
You just think about this, right? I grew up, FA Cup draw was usually on a Sunday in England, and it's an event. Like, nobody knew who was playing who. There was no social media, of course, a lot at that time. But the excitement is sitting in front of the TV and watching the numbered ball being picked out of the hat and everything else, and just seeing who you're playing. I feel like you're taking away just those little pleasures, those little tiny things that seem insignificant. They've been taken out of the game here one by one, and we're getting told, oh yeah, we'll play all the rivalries on the same weekend. It's like in the Premier League, you could put the Man United Liverpool game and Arsenal Tottenham and all those other rivalries on Christmas Eve, just so you know that people are going to watch. And people would be annoyed with that, because the great thing with football, as with most sports, or soccer as I should call it on this podcast, is that the randomness is what makes that game unique. And when you start manufacturing every aspect of it, then you're just going to take away from the authenticity of it. And I feel as if we're just losing that step by step. And it's sad. I mean, you just want some element of surprise, some randomness, some kind of magic to occur, especially in the times we're going through right now. And we can't even have that because MLS wants to get their viewership figures up.
Yep. That's very well said there, Daniel. Very well said.
Sure.
We have a question here from Isabella Parrott. She says, do the same amount of teams from Group A go through as the other groups, even though we have six teams? So that's kind of like going back to the fairness, the integrity of the whole entire tournament. Yes, two teams come out of Group A, and then we have the opportunity of a third. And at first, I thought it would kind of be fair to do Group A has three teams go through, because, you know, then it's 50% in every single group. But somebody else did like it's on Yahoo, and let me look up what it's called. It's called MLS's Orlando tournament format has a significant flaw with a simple fix.
Yeah.
And let me see what it is. It's a, rather than give the 16 knockout berths to six group winners, six runners-up, and four third-place teams, MLS could tweak the allocation to six group winners, six runners-up, the third-place team from Group A, and the three highest points earners out of the other five third-place finishers, and the fourth-place team from Group A. So the fourth-place team would basically be a third-place team in any other group. That's what kind of popped in my head, kind of. I didn't include the fourth-place thing, but give it to the third-place team from Group A. That's 50% from each group. 3 out of 6, 2 out of 4, 2 out of 4, 2 out of 4. And it just seems that they have, I don't want to be like conspiracy theorist, oh, they hate Orlando. Of course, they'd put Orlando in the Group A while they put Atlanta in the easier group to get out of. But, you know, I don't want to say that. But at the end of the day, we did get put in that shitty situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't know.
I completely agree.
It's frustrating.
It's so dumb.
Because, of course, it's us. You know, I'm not saying, I don't know, on one hand, I want to say, no, they wouldn't do that, because, like, they wouldn't look at Orlando and Atlanta and say, we'll just give it to Orlando. Like, their reasoning was, because we are the hosts, technically, that's why they gave us the 16 group.
Well, also,
which makes no sense.
The other three groups, the other groups, whatever, were based on how they finished from last year. It's like the champions, the runners up, and so forth. So they supposedly got it on merit, whereas we were kind of given it. So I'm actually that not makes sense. Mad at
I didn't,
that.
I didn't even think of that. So that makes perfect
sense. They actually came out and said that.
Oh, okay.
The quality
is. I'm not mad at that. I just, to me, it's kind of a microcosm of MLS that there was a simple fix. And if they had just thought about it a little more, they could have come up with it pretty easily, but they just didn't.
Yeah. It's like they said it's a World Cup style tournament. Yet, could you imagine? You know, we're like the Australia World God. Cup right now.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Can you imagine the uproar if this happened in the World Cup?
Well, yeah. Imagine actually in New Zealand, you kind of suck, so we're going to put you in a bigger group. Have good luck.
Yeah.
You know, look at your country's hopes and all your fans are excited. Well, screw it. You're not going to get anything now because we've said so. You know, where again, it's just not balanced at all.
I do think that this group alone hurts the integrity of the tournament. How far do you guys think we're going to get? Like, if we go through, I think we all had decently high hopes, second and third place, and then the third place going through. Do you think we get through to the next round? Do you think we go all the way to semis? Like, what do you guys think?
I think we took 7 points and we go to the next round, but I think after that we'll probably fall.
Who knows?
Yeah, I think that this could be won by literally anybody. Like, I don't know if you guys want to do predictions. Like, maybe it'll just fall to whoever has the most talented squad, because athletic ability is going to be kind of limited with fitness. But it really could literally be anybody, I feel like, who could win this tournament.
I think it's going to come down to – I actually do think it's going to come down to physical ability and straight-up quality.
I think there's so many variables that trying to accurately predict who's going to come out of the knockout stages of this thing is a fool's errand.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree.
We finish bottom of our group, like, it's not even out of the realm of possibility. Even like LAFC could, like anyone could. I have no idea what's gonna happen this tournament, as much as we like to predict it.
All right, yeah. We got two more questions left. The first is gonna be from Lee. He says, "What are the chances this whole thing gets canceled? Our state has had 8,000 new coronavirus cases in the past 3 days." Followed up with by Adrian Viveros. He says, "Who cancels first, Disney or MLS?" I think I'll start with this one. In my opinion, I think there's too much money invested in this for them to cancel, because at the end of the day, they are going to be in their own little bubble. I don't remember who it was. Bill Hamid. Bill Hamid posted it about being a jail on Twitter. I don't know if you guys saw that, but they are still going to be in their own little bubble. I don't know if they agreed that the hotel staff has to stay at the hotel or not.
Yeah, they just get to go home on a night. So
okay, so
thank God.
Right, yeah. Then it really is a jail, but
it kind of sucks for the players. They're not even allowed to bring family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think it gets canceled though. I'm going to be honest. I don't think it gets canceled. There's so much money riding on this. ESPN, I think, is counting on this to get a lot of money. I think MLS is counting on it even more to get some money that they've lost back. I don't think it gets canceled.
Nope, I agree. They'll never cancel it.
The governor stepping in or something like that.
And that's not going to happen.
Not with DeSantis.
Yeah.
He's not going to want to cancel.
Yeah, unless the federal or state government steps in and says, "No, you're not allowed to do this," which, not to talk politics on that on this show, obviously, just look at who they are and really think, is that going to happen? It's not.
No. Yeah. Well, any last thoughts, guys? Any last comments on the tournament before we head out?
Who do y'all, one word prediction, who is going to win, even though we can't predict this tournament?
Who's going to win?
Yeah.
I think, God, let me look at all the teams here for a second. Who is in their groups? Who I think is going to come out? I think it'll be like some sort of dark horse team.
I got one.
Go ahead. You go first.
Adrian Heath and Minnesota.
Mm.
Just I'll a go gut with feeling. Seattle for me. I'll go with them.
Seattle?
Yeah, I just think they're a good team. They can do the dirty work and they can also play a bit. I just think that they've got good experience, you know, they've got experience in high stakes games. I mean, I was going to say LAFC, but I feel like LAFC are very cavalier, and that could go against them, particularly in the playoff stages where it's just a one game, you know, tie. LA could easily score three, but they're just as likely to concede three or four as well. And penalties is a crapshoot. Yeah. So I'd go with Seattle. I just think Seattle could bastard their way through this. And
actually, think about it. Seattle has to be the favorite, right? Because they've been so good in MLS Cup play in the past few years. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking.
They're right? Probably the consensus thing. Schmetz is also a pretty good coach for things like
that. Yeah.
Orlando Lions Den brought up a good point, talking about how teams might throw in the towel if they know that they have a long season ahead, 25-20 games coming up. Wow. Over the next couple of months or so. Before an MLS Cup playoffs. So why would they really care about this? Yes, there is the CCL berth. I think the better teams might be throwing in the towel. It's definitely a possibility. They won't do it on purpose, but maybe you see Carlos Vela doesn't start a knockout stage game against, I don't know, someone like FC Dallas or something like that, because you're not going to risk injury in a knockout stage game of a tournament that, if we're all being honest, doesn't 100% really matter except for a fitness building exercise before the regular season.
I don't know about that. Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him, but I don't know about that.
Really?
I don't think Bob Bradley's going to throw in the towel for this tournament, personally.
Not
I don't
just
think he'll throw in the towel for anything.
Bob Bradley, but like, I think if anything...
generally, yeah.
I don't think any coach is ever going to throw it in on purpose, but like maybe they'll put less effort toward
maybe they'll play the kids.
Maybe not play the kids, but like, you know, take out your stars. Yeah. If you get to the knockout stages, I think the first knockout stage game is going to see a lot of key players rested, because if they do get through, they're going to want those key players for the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. That's three games in a row.
I almost think that some teams could prioritize almost the group games because they might be trying to get like a bye in the playoffs as this season goes on. I mean, I don't think they'll necessarily prioritize, but I don't think that they're going to, you know, give up any sort of points if they can. I don't think they'll rest players because this could have implications in the season.
Well, here's the thing, though. A U.S. Open Cup happens concurrently with MLS season, so then you're making decisions about who's going to start the Open Cup game on Wednesday and who's going to start the league game on Saturday. You don't have that here. It's just this tournament. And also, I think we're underestimating the competitive fire that these players and coaches have. And this is going to be after a long off season, and then two games back, and then another off season. This is going to be the first action they've had in a while, and I bet they're chomping at the bit to, hey, I'm here, I'm away from my family, I'm not getting paid that much, I might as well make the most of it, you know? I can't see Carlos Vela being okay with, oh, I'm over here, we got to the knockout stage, you're going to sit me on the bench. I can't see that.
Well, there were rumors earlier on that Carlos Vela is not going to come.
I could see that, but if he is there, I think they're giving MLS is giving waivers for people with pregnant partners, I think. But I mean, Carlos Vela is just the example in the Chicharito, you know. Actually, he's rumored to set up too. Nani. Say Nani gets, say we get to the knockout stages. I can't see Nani being like, oh yeah, you can sit me for this one, coach.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Now, the last thing I want to say is another good point on the Orlando Lions Den podcast was about weather. We are dead in the summertime. Now, the games are obviously early in the morning, late at night, but it's going to be rainy. It's going to be lots of thunderstorms. And I was reading for weather delays, it's going to be the same exact, they're going to take care of it the same exact way they do for regular season MLS games. How do you think weather will play a part in this tournament?
They gonna learn. Florida don't care.
Florida weather does not care about sports.
Don't care.
If you're playing at 8 in the morning, then you could be fine. Don't worry about it.
Hey, you won't die, but it's going to be hot and muggy.
Yeah, but the other times are what? 9, 10:30 at night? And what's the other one?
Mm-hmm. It's like 9 p.m. and 10:30.
Yeah, it rains at those times sometimes.
Yeah, a lot.
So,
it's a crap shoot, the whole thing. So.
Bro, what if a hurricane like starts up off the coast? And
Well, that could kill... That could kill the competition, you know, let alone COVID. Yeah. That could just come
that,
in and...
That seriously is something that we would have to consider about, here, like, that canceling the tournament.
Here's my coldest take of this entire discussion. I think this thing might be a disaster just because of unforeseen events.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing like this has happened or likely will happen again.
That's in line with 2020.
Yeah, that's a typical 2020.
This could easily be a disaster of unforeseen events.
Hurricane Don Garber comes in and just wipes out the fields, and it's impossible to continue, and they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I can see that. All right, well, that should just about cover it. Guys, please don't hesitate to let us know your thoughts on the MLS's back tournament, what you think about where we'll finish, who our best player will be, that kind of that stuff we talked about earlier on, and then what your preferred starting lineup would be, the five substitutes, all that sort of stuff that we talked about. Don't hesitate to let us know your thoughts on our thoughts. Like I said before, we are going to start reading five-star reviews, so make sure you leave a five-star review. Only takes a couple seconds. Make sure you do that survey. Only takes a couple seconds. It's literally five questions. Please do it. Daniel, where can our listeners find you at?
They can find me in a pub, getting sloshed and not really caring about it.
Same.
Fair enough.
Chase, where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me on Twitter, BottlesGoCSC, and also that's my PSN in case anyone wants that FIFA work.
Hey, boy.
Football Manager's where it's at. Adam, where can our listeners find you at?
Daniel's pub. Find me on Twitter.
Hey, I'm buying. I'll buy the first round if you're sure.
Oh, yeah. Find me on Twitter.
I'm there.
Here's your taco truck.
Well, if it's just the four of you guys, I'll buy all night. If it's everyone else, it's one round. I'm a good host.
Daniel might actually like us, guys. That's how British people show affection.
Buying alcohol.
Yeah. No, usually
make sure
it's true.
You head over to Cappy's Subs. 407-647-9099. Thank you so much, and we will catch you on the next one.
Quickly here, Nani gets in behind. Here's Nani with a chip. It's 1-1.